This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show, that's our good friends at Jam Software. I'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Fantastic. I am dealing with a Internet of Things disaster at my house. Not really, but over the weekend I noticed that my upstairs air conditioning wasn't cooling. Like, it was coming on, but it just wasn't cooling. So it's like, you know, the home person in me thinks, okay, that's either a Freon leak, there's low on Freon. What turns out, the fan outside wasn't even coming on. Okay, so I had a guy here today, you know, it's like, okay, there's power outside, power up in the unit. He takes my Nest cover off. He puts the yellow wire to the red wire, unit comes on. It's like, okay, so my Nest is broken. And it turns out the back plate is what's broken. Like, and it doesn't look like there's a lot to that, but there is some sort of little connection that when the front plate pops on, it's that clearly is broken, because we brought my Nest front from upstairs, from downstairs, and put it upstairs, and it still didn't work. So clearly that's the back plate. So I'm hoping Nest will send me a new back plate. And I've heard that they actually had some issues with those. But if not, my $15 thermostat that came with the house is working just fine. And of course, those can go bad. Yes. Those can go bad too. That's what the guy said. He goes, I've never seen a Nest broken. He goes, but these, you know, thermostats break. But it is kind of frustrating that you pay a $75 service call for someone to tell you that your thermostat that was $250 is dead. But you know, it's, you know, I really like the Nest, but, and this is not really the show for this, but you know, this whole home automation is actually, I think, getting to a little bit more maturity, and where it's not as expensive to get into. Like, you can really start small, and I feel like that things like HomeKit and then the Alexa ecosystem are, to me, exactly what this industry needs, because it's not like you have to pick one vendor for everything. You know, with the one of the cool things about the Alexa program, you know, works with Alexa or the HomeKit program, is like, you can mix and match products from multiple vendors, and they all funnel into the HomeKit app. So like, I have a couple of things from my lights that are from different vendors, but you'd never know that in the HomeKit app. You don't even need the manufacturer's app to make these things work. You just like literally scan them with your HomeKit app, and they start working. It's really done well. And so, you know, and then Nest, you know, at the time when I invested in Nest, now we have two, the HomeKit wasn't a thing, and they, you know, Nest wasn't even owned by Google. And I'm not even necessarily like anti-Google. We love Google stuff at my house. But one of the thermostats that's really intrigued me is the Ecobee. And it's HomeKit compatible, but that's not really the reason. The reason is because it supports remote sensors. And so what that does is, you know, like, it's a problem, you know, wherever your thermostat is where its temperature gauge is. Well, that may not be always be in the best spot. So, like, ours is in our hallway, and it's a narrow hallway. So, that easily can, you know, it cannot have an accurate reading to what the rest of the house is. So, with these Ecobees, you can have these remote sensors that, like, you could place, you know, it comes with one, you can buy up to, you know, multiples. And like, our boys' bedroom is the hottest part of the house. So it could basically, the Ecobee could know that this room is still hot and keep the units going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have very, very different temperature behaviors in our house as well, because we have two rooms that are against the other part of the house, the neighbor's part of the house, and two rooms that are on the outside. And the temperature difference there can be quite, quite noticeable. So yeah, I quite appreciate something like that.
I'm just a big fan of HomeKit so far. Number one, one of the things that's neat about it is Apple really has a lot of security controls. Like, there's only a handful of factories that HomeKit compatible products can be made in. I mean, when I say handful, I think it's like 800. But
small number for China.
It is, and that's the thing. When these things are, you don't know what these things are doing. And we saw that article in the news this week about the $30 teddy bear that parents can leave messages for their kids. Like, it's. That's like funneling all that to an open server somewhere that, you know, people have gathered. You know, that's one of the things that HomeKit is helping against. But that's my Internet of Things story for the day. So I've got a broken Nest, but it works out well, because I'm getting ready to go out of town to a conference. It's the National Association of Independent Schools Conference up in Baltimore. And of course, I'll be back by the time this show airs, but I really wanted to have my air conditioning working before I left. It's getting a little warm here tomorrow, so I felt bad for my wife. But nevertheless, we digress. So our topic today is something we talked about a year ago in episode 123. It was display signage in schools. And we've kind of evolved our thinking about that technology-wise. And then I've really done a lot more research about this, and we've seen some of the, you know, just various other options that are on the market. So we thought we'd just spend some time explaining what we're doing, what the motivation for this kind of product category is, and then what are some of the other options out there. And it's focused on much as different devices as we do different software platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's an interesting things have changed, definitely. I think one of the big changes since we last talked about it is the release of the Apple TV 4 and the app platform and tvOS and things like that are very, very significant, even though they're still relatively immature. And then, of course, the rise of, you know, $40 to $60 streaming sticks from basically everybody, to the point now where, you know, the back of your television looks like an intensive care unit with, you know, the number of cables and things hanging out of it and little plugs going into it and so on. So it's an interesting time, and the cost of experimenting, I think, is way down from what it used to be. So I think looking at the cost of software and cost of service as being one of the kind of dominating factors in terms of what makes financial sense to get involved in and what just looks too expensive now.
Absolutely. So let's start out by saying, when we say we want to do display signage, what are our goals here? And for me, in our school, these are things that are basically announcements. It's things that, you know, parents are walking through the halls, as kids are walking through the halls, that you want them to be able to see. So, and these are obviously heavy on visuals. So this could be things deadline, re-enrollment, or the tickets for this event are on sale, or we're having a sale on T-shirts in the school office. You know, that kind of thing. It's very short messaging, you know, very, very short things. It's very, again, very heavy on visuals, but it's things you want people, it's not emergency, but it's just reoccurring things that are going on at school.
And having to avoid repeating that many times to many different people. I think that's something that our school has kind of grown a lot over the last year. And I think that's something that I've noticed is that if you don't communicate effectively at that scale, you just end up spending your whole time communicating the same message to ever smaller groups of people who might have missed it the first time. So it's something that I'm looking at to do something a bit more with. And some of the options you've outlined here, Bradley, I think look really interesting. I'm going to definitely be playing some of them over the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's what we're doing. We are using Apple TV 4s. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple things when you're setting up these Apple TVs. You want to turn off AirPlay. You don't have to, but to me that's just easier. Turn off AirPlay. Turn off the screensaver. Turn off sleep. And then I like to turn off auto updates off. I don't really want iOS or tvOS updating in the background. I really like to control when I do that. And it's not that I don't want the updates. Is I would like to be able to do that, after school one day and go do them all and then restart the slides. But the app that we're using is an app called KitCast. And I'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's kitcast.tv. It's KitCast, KITCAST. Now, when I first started using this, it was $99 per month. And now you would, I know a lot of schools are going to say, gosh, $99 per month, that's expensive. But that's unlimited displays. And you'll see a lot of the other options we're going to talk about, they are like a $10 a month per display. And we've got 7 or 8 of these going. And so you can see, $99 at the time wasn't a lot to us, but I know to a lot of schools it definitely was a lot. But they've since gone free, which is a concern. You always are concerned when things go free, and there's another app later that we'll talk about. But I've talked to the guys at KitCast, and they're kind of retooling it and enhancing the back end, and then they're going to have various upgrade options, which I think is a great idea. So, I'm not even sure what those options will be, but they are going to have some in-app purchases, and I'll certainly take advantage of those. Now, one of the things I do want to mention is, obviously, you have an Apple ID tied to this. We just have a generic Apple ID that we use for things like this. I don't even remember the email address, but it's just a generic Apple ID. And Really worked well so far. There was like one weekend where it just was down. We couldn't get new sites to roll in, and like after the cache had kind of died, they just stopped working. But that was, you know, that we've been using it probably about a year, and that was really the only issue we've had. And really, it just kind of works as our communications folks add in new slides. They just appear. You don't have to stop and restart them. They just appear. So it's very, very easy. You can upload.
You don't have to intervene with the television itself. You can just make a change on the back end, and then it just pushes it to all the connected screens from there. Is that right?
Bingo. And then you can reorder the slides on the fly, and you can set different, you know, 15 seconds, 5 seconds. And one of the cool things is if you don't have like folks in your office who are like talented with the graphic design, they have a pre-built like kind of template maker where you can make your own slides in there. And obviously it's not as nice as doing something in InDesign, but it definitely works. And it is a web-based CMS. There's no apps to run. It really works from any computer. But Fraser, you mentioned, I didn't even think about this, it really does not work well on iPad.
Yeah, I tried it this morning. I was looking at your notes, and I thought, I was eating my breakfast. I just downloaded it onto my TV before I left for school. And it looked great, and it worked really well on the TV. But when I went to try and, you know, update it from my iPad, the web site simply doesn't work at all with WebKit on iOS. So I had to go to a computer for that one.
Yeah, and that's obviously, like, ideally you do it from iOS. But in reality, they would probably need more of a native app to be able to do what they're doing on iOS, to be able to update from iOS. That is a good idea for like the home, like family announcement time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I would love to see, and this would be a function of tvOS as much as anything, it would almost be cool if like KitKast could be the screensaver.
Mm.
And so like instead of having to launch the app, it could be a screensaver. And so, like, if you wanted to use it at home, it's like as the Apple TV was running, if it went to sleep or the screensaver came on, it could say, you know, I don't know, family announcements. But that's probably overkill. So, Gil, you know, I mentioned it was a flat rate, and now it's free. But that you'll see some of the options we talk about later on are a per screen and are a flat rate. So, depending on your school size, that'll be something to consider. Now, some of the other options for Apple TV are, another one is Sigmundo, I think is how you pronounce it, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. It's $22 per year, and it's really built, like you actually build the slides on your Apple TV. And so the only way I'd really recommend this is if you just had one, because obviously like that's not going to be ideal to do this on about 10 of these things. It's just not ideal. There used to be an app that we started using originally called Video Sign Player, and what was cool about it is it simply pulled from a Dropbox folder is all it did. And now obviously, like on an iPad, that would be easy to do. Like, so you could make some things in Pixelmator, export them to Dropbox, and you'd be good to go. But it just kind of stopped working on us. Never could get anybody to help me. The company that does it is actually they make like kind of building wide signs. And like digital signs, and they built this app just for one of their clients, and they just decided to give it away for free. But they ultimately discontinued it, which again, that's the concern of free things is that you know there's no motivation to continue to support it. But I don't know, that was a nice option, just a simple Dropbox type reader. That was nice. Now, the benefit to the Apple TV obviously is it's kind of built in to your Apple TV Apple ecosystem, and in a future world and in future versions of iOS there might be multiple device management stuff for Apple TV 4 that kind of enhances that in a hypothetical world. Is that the best way you would say that, Fraser?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. I mean, Apple TV for a number of years has had some ability to be enrolled in MDM, but there wasn't really much that you could do with it at that point. But as Apple TV 4 is much more capable of a platform, you can see a world in which you might want to be able to control more things and set more things remotely using the capability that it already has to connect to MDM. So it's something to probably keep an eye on in future releases and future years, because if you are going to go for like a large-scale deployment of these devices, say you want to put 10 or 15 or 20 in your school, then having means of central control, like the KitKat backend, and also some configuration through MDM, that's a strong argument for the Apple TV, even though the device itself is, you know, double or more the price of some of the competitor products that are out there.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you got to look at your scale. I mean, one of the huge downsides to the Apple TV is it is very expensive per display. I mean, it is $150 per display, which, you know, is not like it's not as expensive as putting a computer on there, but it is $150 per display. Now, you do, one of the downsides about the Apple TV being an actual box is you are going to have to mount it on the TV somewhere. We have some little cheapo mounts that we bought from Amazon. I think they're like $10. I'll put those in the show notes, and they work well.
It's
like
a plastic plate with clips around it, isn't it?
Basically, and you can, I think you can either clip it to your TV or you can Velcro it to the back of the TV. Works well. Mm-hmm. And then we even have some like little remote holders from Amazon. Those have been discontinued. I can't find them, but honestly, just anything with like a little sleeve would do it. Now, one thing to consider about these remotes, depending on where you're putting them, like, you might not want to include the Siri remote near it, because those are $80 remote controls to replace. And so what I did is I put a lot of those like in my desk drawer, and then I found I don't know why I had them, but like the old silver Apple TV remotes, they still work on the new Apple TV, so I just have those in a little Velcro sleeve behind the TV. So if we do need to do something, it's, you know, the remote's right there.
Tell you a quick story, by the way. The first Macs that we ever bought for the new building that we're in just now were the first Intel iMacs. Do you remember when they came with a remote control?
Oh, yeah, the old
iMacs. I still have a drawer of the old white remote controls somewhere about the school, which we never ever deployed them. We never left them out. We put them in a drawer the first day years ago, and they're still kicking about the school somewhere today. I bet they would work, actually.
Well, and that, yeah, because that was when, what was the app called those worked with?
Front row.
Yeah. That was a good app.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a precursor to the Apple TV user interface for the first two generations, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember. I had that first Apple TV, $299. And then, gosh, looking back, that was so limited in what it could do.
Yeah. It was really, just an iPod for your TV, wasn't it? You know, the idea of syncing stuff to the TV and things.
Oh, yeah, it's awful.
The world before streaming.
Yeah, because I think that, I don't know that I, did I eventually get Netflix? I know I had YouTube, I don't know that I ever got Netflix.
I can't remember.
Anyways, doesn't matter. You know, one thing to know on the Apple TV Siri remotes is they are paired to each device, but I believe if you walk around, I'm almost positive that one remote they'll respond to all of them. I think. Okay. I don't know for sure. I think they are actually paired. They won't work. I know, like, I think the volume will work on all of them, but I have to test that to be sure. But I know the silver ones, they don't have to be paired. They're IR based, and so if you got the old silver ones around, and you can buy those cheap on Amazon. In fact, you could probably sell one of the Siri ones and buy like four of the silver ones.
And of course, you can also use the app as well, right? So you could actually set up all your Apple TVs on your phone. And you could just walk around with your phone and work in that way, too.
That's true. But the only caveat to that is you have to be signed into the same home sharing account on the remote.
That's what you do.
So, like, if it, obviously at home, sure, but like at school. And, like, if you had, you know, if you just had like a, the way that this would be if you like had an old iPad that you guys weren't using, or just even a spare that you could have signed into that account. Yeah. That'd be the only downside. But yeah, that would be ideal. So the deployment for KitKat to me wasn't bad. Just went to every TV. Once you launch it, it has you go to like app.kitkat.tv, and, you know, you log into your account and you link a display and you type it. It gives you a little code to type in, and that's how it links it. Again, and that did not work well on iOS at all. Wouldn't even work on my phone, that part of it. So you will need to take your computer around with you. But honestly, the more time consuming part is just setting up the Apple TVs, like signing into the Apple TV, like with your Apple ID, installing the software updates, installing the apps. And that's, again, where a theoretical, like, MDM enhancements to Apple TV would be nice. If you could just say, hey, when this Apple TV boots up, install this configuration, and then you'll be good to go. You would still have the KitKat piece to do, where you have to link that. But again, that's not too bad. And again, that would, you know, even at distributed locations, like someone, you could just have someone on the other end plug it up and say, hey, launch the KitKat app and tell me what the code says, and then you're good to go. Website is nice. You can see all your displays. You can rearrange slides. It's fancy. It really, really works. I kind of don't have to touch it. So That's kind of the Apple TV discussion. Again, I'm honestly surprised there are not more apps, but I imagine the reason is that the Apple TV is so expensive.
Yeah, there's more than open questions to how many of them there actually are available. But if you had a killer solution for something like that, then you could. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to see the Apple TV just get under $100? You know, just I think that would make it a lot easier for people to get one.
Oh, absolutely. I have so many complaints about Apple TV, but I think all of them go out the door if it's a $99 device. We've had a couple of Fire TV sticks at home now, and like they are nowhere near as good as Apple TV in terms of like just the interface and how smooth the remote is. Not even close. Yeah, not even close. Now, I've not tried the big Fire TV. We just have the sticks at home, mainly for Spotify and Amazon content. But if you told me, look, you can either have I'll ask the question in reverse. Like if I didn't have anything today and I used the Fire TV, you told me this was $40, I would probably be fine with that. Because, I can buy three Fire TVs before I buy – or Fire TV sticks before I buy one Apple TV. I don't know. I mean, the Fire TV stick is a good little device, and we'll talk about more about that. But before we do, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. Thanks to Jamf for being a longtime sponsor of Out of School. Jamf Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing Apple devices. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every day. Bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classroom. Start a free trial at jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. So what are the other options out there hardware-wise? So the ones that come to mind for me are the Roku stick, the Fire TV stick, and the Chromecast. And I think you'll notice... And again, the big boys of all these would work. The Roku 4, the Fire TV, the big one. Those would all work. But certainly for these needs, the sticks are awesome. So why are the sticks great? Number one, they're cheap. All these devices are under $50. I mean, you're talking about a third of the price of the Apple TV 4. That's huge for a lot of schools, especially if you're looking at like 10 displays. That's a lot of money to be different.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, though, isn't it? The question of how many displays you're going to do, because at one level, yeah, if you've got 10 displays, then a lower cost per display is going to be attractive. But then if you've got 20 displays, it may be more attractive to have a platform that you can actually centrally manage at some level. You know, there's a crossover there, I think, isn't there, where, up to a certain point, it's fine to just keep walking around and, like in the old days with my Wi-Fi, what we used to have like Apple Airport Extremes around the school, and when we had like three or four, that was okay for me to go around and change settings on every single one of them. But once it got up to 9 or 10 or 12 or 14, that suddenly became too much to manage, and we had to get a central service. So there's a bit of a crossover point there, but where it is depends, I suppose, on your budget, how time consuming, how far apart these devices are, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, it's something that I tweeted about this, like the speed at which I can deploy apps to hundreds of iPads at once, and it always blows my mind. And that's actually been one of the biggest things our teachers have commented this year with our iPad deployment, is they love that if they want it, they need an app. It's just so simple to get it deployed, and so it's like, do you want to spend, do you want to spend time managing them, or pay. Pay a little bit more. So, time will tell there. And that will probably depend on, how big your school is and then how big your budget is. If you've got like, a beer budget, then maybe the Fire TV deployments are what you need. You can afford to spend a little bit of time tinkering and kind of having to manage them one by one, because you can't do the project otherwise. And so another reason I like these sticks is they plug directly into the HDMI port. So, like, you don't have to worry about mounting them anywhere. And then most of them, too, can be powered by the TV's USB port. Now, the downside with this is if you do that when the TV shuts off, it will often turn off the stick. They lose power. So, like, if it requires the app to start up. So that's something to consider. But if you were in a situation where you have a power outlet, but there again, if you've got a TV there, you must have power there somewhere. We've got an issue like on one of our Apple TVs where the TV, there was an addition, and so our building is old, and so it's hard to get power in new places. and they kind of came off the light switch. And so when the lights, someone flips the light switch out in that hallway, the TV goes off. Well, then the Apple TV goes off. And so when they turn it back on, they have to restart that. So that gives me another point. The downside of the Apple TV, and you know, like the top row where it has like previews, like, so what's on the top left by default is the movies app. And so the weekend that we were having problems with KitKast, do you know what one of the movies that was on that little preview was?
Oh, I'm going to guess it's something super inappropriate.
Sausage Party.
That's the movie I was going to see, was Sausage Party.
Sausage Party. Like, yeah. Fantastic. So my tip is to pull the movies app off that top. So yeah. That doesn't happen. But yeah,
we've been doing that for a while on earlier generations, you know, the rentals and previews and stuff. Now, it's a huge pain on earlier devices because you have to, you know, configure every one of them by hand. There's a lot of things to turn off in those older Apple TVs. But yeah, you want to use the restrictions there to turn off a bunch of those settings just so that never shows up.
Yeah, so that was real fun. I was getting text about that. That was real fun. So just turn the TV off. Turn it off. Yeah, Sausage Party. And I'll tell you that, you know, it's like, I'm just getting too old that movies like that offend me. So, so some TVs, the HDMI port is at an odd angle, and these sticks just won't fit. Most of the devices like this will ship an adapter in the box to kind of lengthen it out. So that's something to consider. And these sticks don't have Ethernet, so you definitely want to make sure these areas have great Wi-Fi coverage, because Wi-Fi is the only way to access that. Where on the Apple TV, you can obviously wire in Ethernet. And why would you want to wire in Ethernet? Just because it's one less thing on the Wi-Fi. If whatever service you're using, let's say, plays videos, well, if it doesn't cache it, that might be a lot of bandwidth, on that access point. And I don't, you know, again, it may not matter, but in your situation, it might.
Yeah, you may be far away or something like that, and you know, you've got various issues that could crop up there.
Yeah, so the sticks are Wi-Fi only. I believe there's a little adapter you can buy for the Chromecast, for the power adapter, to make it Ethernet, I believe. But again, that's an additional that's additional cost. Mm-hmm. I just remembered about that. That is an additional. I think it's like $15 extra.
Yeah, that's with the new generation Chromecast, isn't it?
Yes, that Chromecast 2. Yeah. Now, one of the things, like, Chromecast is really close, honestly, where you could just throw some stuff on Google Photos and use that as like the screensaver, because then there's no really user interface on the Chromecast. But the downside is it like displays like the Wi-Fi network and some stuff like that in the bottom right hand corner. So if you could turn all of that off, the Chromecast plus Google Photos could be a great solution. But if you've ever used a Chromecast and know what the user interface looks like, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I think for me, one of the things about a lot of those ideas where you end up sort of doing a static slideshow is, what's the production pipeline for your people to make new content for the screen? Because when we had our first interactive display, we had a Mac Mini looking Keynote in the background, and like the complexity of updating that Keynote file so that it would actually show on the screen was so great that we ended up just discontinuing the whole project, because it required like updating a file and then, you know, doing, you know, remote sharing onto that Apple the thing, and then doing a remote screen to go in and operate Keynote and so on. And it was pain upon pain. So I think something to bear in mind as well is like, how easy is it making it for your content people to actually update this thing as you go?
Yeah, that's a great point, because if it is difficult, then it won't get updated, and then it's just going to look going to look out of date.
That's worse than nothing.
So that's kind of some of the hardware stuff. Now let's talk about some of these apps that you can use. First one is really honestly basic. It's Plex. It's a media center application that can play photos. So it's free. And one of the kickers though is you'll need an always on machine, so a Mac or a PC or something like that on your network to be able to pull that. Or if you have a premium plan, they have a Plex Cloud Beta where it can pull stuff from like a Dropbox or OneDrive, but again, this is not built for that, and so it's any time Plex could make a change in how their photos work to make it where the slideshow would not work like you need it to anymore. So that's just something to consider, but that'll work. The next one is it works on Fire TV and Chromecast and Android TV. I didn't even mention that, but that's another.
Well, yeah, remember Android TV?
Yeah, I forgot about that. It's called Screen Cloud. And it's $20 per screen per month, but EDU gets 25% off. And it's, again, a web-based application. Seems to work well. I didn't test it a whole lot, but it is something just to consider. And, again, it's more expensive than KitKast, and there's a monthly fee. But if you're getting Fire TVs for $40, you know, it is cheaper.
You just do your own equation there, don't you?
Right, yeah, but it's Screen Cloud. And we'll have links to all these apps in the show notes. The next one, I can't even pronounce it. MVIX, M-V-I-X is what it's called. And it,
this is going to be, it's actually going to be MUVIX or something like that, but all the vowels are missing.
Yeah, Web 2.0 for you. This is a Fire TV app. Now, this is my favorite, like, website trick. There's no pricing on the website. You have to contact for pricing, which...
That means you're going to hate the pricing.
Yeah, that means you're going to hate it. That means it's going to be way too expensive. I just really despise that in a way. I know, and all that says to me is that they discount the crap out of it for, like, it's like, oh, the retailer price is this, but for you, we can give you that. I mean, I know for some complex stuff that they can't always give pricing that's going to depend on your feature set, but it's like...
Yeah, I mean, if it's a bespoke AV installation, I get that, right? But this is not that, right?
Right. The next one is, I was going to pull their website up, it's called Now Signage. And let's see, Now Signage. Now, and if our listeners have any, any other ones they come across, like, please send us email at outofschool.net or send us a tweet, because this is just the ones I was researching and found. This is called Now Signage, and it is really, it's really aimed at, like, you know, retail kind of environments, and it works on Fire Stick, Fire TV boxes, and Android smart devices. I couldn't find any prices. It says no set of fees and no long-term contracts, but all prices are based on a monthly recurring fee. Our prices are quoted on a request. Inquire now. And again, I mean, just give me a ballpark. Like, is it $10 a display? I mean, just something. I don't know. I just wish they would at least tell me something. Because what I hate about that is it's kind of like if you ever go, I don't know, it's been gone to a job interview, and, like, you have a number in your head, and they have a number in your head. And honestly, if those numbers aren't remotely similar, nothing else happens after that matters. And it's kind of the same thing here. If they're thinking $50 a display per month, and you're thinking $5, and they didn't, none of the other features matter. And so it just is frustrating that they at least won't give you.
That reminds me of a conversation I recently had with our ISP salesman who was trying to sell us on a managed internet connection. And the quote that came back was literally 10 times what we're currently paying for a service that wasn't even as fast. So that was an example of a conversation that probably shouldn't have gone as far as it even did.
Yeah, we had that recently, and the guy even told me, yeah, you probably shouldn't change. The big thing they offered us was like faster repair times, like guaranteed repair times. It's like, but it hasn't gone up in 5 years. I don't need faster repair times. So now the next one, this is a bigger beast, and so this will take a few minutes to explain, is digitalsignage.com. And this, I heard about this from a school near us, Macaulay School near us. That's where Ted Turner went to school. You know Ted Turner, right? Used to own the, started CNN, TBS. So it was his high school. And this is what they use. Now, there are some free options on there. And it runs on micro PCs. And so this is like little, and you can buy them directly from them. They have one that starts at like $165. That's basically like an Android-based PC, like a really, really cheap PC. And then they have, you can buy like Windows, like kind of those Windows 7 CE type devices. It's funny, I was at my father-in-law's dental office, and he has a milling machine that makes crowns. It's running a version of Windows. It's kind of funny. But, I know on the Android version, it like actually boots straight to their app. So that's actually pretty cool. So in like the situation of like a power outage, and when these things shut off, when they shut back on, it boots up and launches straight to their app. Now, this is obviously more expensive than even the Apple TV, even on the low end at $165. But that's something to consider for large deployments, is that the app would relaunch in the event of a power outage. You know, again,
if you're running all the screens for an airport or something, then you're going to want to have something that just comes up with an intervention.
Right. It's like this is like custom hardware for it. Now, they do have a free plan. Like, you can run it on your own server, and they do have like a $99 a month plan, not per screen, but just per month, and it gives you extra features. You can use their own cloud interface to not have to run something on your own server. Again, Mikala uses it and swears by it. Now, one of the things like it does do that's pretty cool is, like, so I'm trying to think of how to visualize this. So, like, you've seen those, like, you can do, say, you know, great game last night, football team, and you can have like just, you know, static stats, and then like in the window you can have a video playing.
Okay.
So it's way more complicated than just like uploading simple images. Like, you can do like tickers and things like that at the bottom. So you can just, like, you know, it seems like it's like the big daddy here. Yeah. But again, the devices sound cheap at $165, but then they are more expensive than the Apple TV, but they are computers. They're microcomputers. So something to think about. If you want to do things like more than just static images, maybe this is a good platform. I mean, this seems like the platform if you are really, really wanting to do a lot of neat things here, and this is a huge part of your marketing push for your school or for your business, DigitalSignage.com could be a really good option. Looking at the interface, it's way more complicated than anything I've used. Not that it is bad. It's just it is more complicated. You're going to have to spend a lot of time building things. And it depends on, like, whoever at your school, your business is in charge of this, how much effort they want to put into this.
Yeah, that sounds a wee bit like somebody's going on a course to learn how to work that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So going forward, it's hard to say where this kind of, I don't know what, not platform, but like this genre of products is going. The Fire TV does seem like the platform here for a lot of people because it is low cost. But like we said, for large deployments, maybe the Apple TV with its MDM or hopefully future MDM enhancements will be a great platform. But we do need to see more applications. But there again, it may be where there is no market for the Apple TV because people that want the really cheap stuff, they're going with the Fire TV option. But the people who want the really high-end stuff, they're going with something like DigitalSignage.com with a custom device that boots right up into it and that can even remotely push things to the hardware.
What you're saying there sounds to me a little bit like the Apple TV is a high-end piece of hardware with low-end software available for it.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
We'll see if that steps up.
And again, I mean, if I was starting this project today, I would probably go with the Fire TV. I really would. Because we've got like, I think it's like between 7 and 10. And I mean, so it's like enough to where it's small enough where I can like literally walk around and do things within about 5 minutes of each other. But it's enough to where that cost, when we spend, you know, 150 times, I think it's 8, 150 times 8, that's a lot of money. Yep. And if you do 40 times 8. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at. And again, I would love to hear from other listeners what their schools are doing. Are you doing a Keynote, a Mac Mini hooked up to TV with Keynote, or any other apps that you're using? We would love feedback on what other listeners are doing. Or if you're doing nothing, we would love to know, you know, are you going to try one of these?
One thing I'm interested in, because we had issues with this back in the day when we were using the Mac Mini, was when you have some kind of feed that it cycles, it loops once or twice, and you sit and watch it, and it works all works great. But once it's looped like 150 times or 200 times in the day, how's the performance? How hot is the device getting? All those kind of things. We ran into some issues with the version of macOS that we were using at the time, where eventually the whole thing would just freeze if you left Keynote looping for, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours at a time. So the reliability and longevity of some of these solutions is something that I would maybe question a little bit, just because of that. You're talking about $40 hardware. You know, is that going to run continuously for 5, 6, 7, 10 hours without some kind of issue popping up? Or maybe just even shortening the life of the device? I don't know. I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying it's a question that's probably worth asking, because nobody really has the patience to sit and test that for, you know, 10 or 15 hours. But eventually you might see some issues that pop up with that. So.
Well, absolutely, because it's like I was talking to my air conditioning guy today. And he was talking about, like, a lot of air conditioning guys I've heard like hate the new stuff. And this guy seemed to love them. He said they look at new technology all the time. And he said there's a lot of new technology that's coming to like the actual physical units, like where there's like Bluetooth built into the units. And he said, but the kicker is, it's like, you know, we see this new stuff, but we don't know how, this is brand new stuff. It's in a new model. You know, will this stuff like last outside for 10 years? Like 10 years from now, does that Bluetooth still work? I mean, we don't know. We don't, what do you do? Like wait 10 years to deploy it to see how it's going to work? I mean, that's the conundrum all this. Do you set, and like you said, you know, some of these devices, in your testing, like how do we test this stuff? Like you maybe get one of them, like look at it for about 30 minutes and like, okay, this seems to work. I mean, I guess you can, but it's hard to test it for like a month or two because you really just want to get on with the project.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose if you have multiple screens, you could put one in and see how it goes. Whereas, you know, we do only have the one public screen, so it would be a whole big cutover if we were to do that.
That's kind of my thoughts here. Would love to hear from other listeners. Send me a tweet at Bradley Chambers or at Fraser Spears, or get in contact on our website at atofschool.net. And if we get anything. If we get any good feedback with any new apps or any good tips on some of these devices, we'll definitely mention that on our future shows.
Cool. It's an exciting time, though. I think the kind of smartphone dividend is paying off in these devices, just being A, very capable, and B, very, very cheap at the same time. And that leads to some interesting opportunities. You know, I think the last thing we talked about this, we were talking about things like, you know, can we bend the Apple TV to our will, or do you have to get a computer? And now you're saying, well, is the Apple TV overkill for what we want to do? Can we do something for, you know, a third of the price or something? So it's an exciting time, and it's something that there's, you know, so much more experimentation you can afford to do as well for very little money and not a whole lot of time either.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about the high-end devices are $150. I mean, it's like you could easily justify, like, you know, getting a Fire TV, getting a Chromecast, and getting an Apple TV and seeing, like, you know, which one you like best, kind of thing.
Yeah, so you'll find a use for the other ones as well, for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Somehow a Roku Express showed up in my office. Like, I don't even know who shipped it to me. Like, it just showed up from, it was an Amazon order. I checked my Amazon business account and my personal Amazon account, and they weren't orders. So like, we have an auction coming up, so I gave it to our auction folks, and like, they have a little movie night basket that they threw it in. And that's another plug before we get off. Amazon Business is a really, really cool feature. Has that come to the UK yet? Have you used that at all?
Amazon Business, I'm not familiar with that name.
So So what Amazon Business is it's businesses can sign up for Amazon accounts. And basically, like, I create an account for our school, and then we have other accounts that, like, other people that buy things on Amazon use. And so the cool thing is, like, everything is, like, our school is tax exempt, so I put the tax exempt certificate on file, and all the orders that come through on our account are tax exempt. And then as, like, the administrator, I can go in there and find invoices, see what other people have ordered. And the idea, like, behind this is that your accounting person would be the administrator. And what's cool is you can even give individual people, like, purchase limits that otherwise have to be approved. It's almost like a built-in purchase order system. You can list POs on the orders, and it's really just a neat feature. The only downside to it I've seen so far is, like, if you upgrade to Prime, it's only on, like, every person needs Prime, which kind of stinks. Like, I feel like if you buy Prime for the account, like, I mean, I understand, like, if you had 30 people on there, but, like, I mean, at least give me, like, we have 4 people on there, and each person, like, basically, what happens is I end up doing all the ordering. Basically, is end up what's happening because my account has Prime.
Maybe it's a benefit,
Amazon is honestly for IT, like miscellaneous IT stuff. It's like really, really good for like cables, like little hard drives, little, you know, cheapo switches. Like, fantastic. Prime shipping, fantastic.
I don't think we have that in the UK, but we certainly don't use it in school. But we do. We have kind of an elaborate paper and email system to kind of effect the same behavior. Where what we have to do is, like, you assemble the basket, then you have to, like, send a PDF of your basket to get approved, and then it comes back, and then you get somebody else to order it for you. You know, it's all a bit of a fiddle because we don't have a system like that. At least I don't know that we do. I'm going to go and check now and see if it is in the UK and sign up pretty immediately if we do. But of course, you know, like, probably everywhere we order, I would say probably at least 60% of all the stuff that we buy for the school comes from Amazon now. and I would gladly make you 80% of it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great purchasing place for, you know, enterprise stuff. I even buy, like, our little the badges that our key cards go in. I even buy those from Amazon. Mm-hmm. Pens, everything.
Yep.
Basically, anything that's not from Apple.
The Amazon, the Amazon basic stuff is phenomenal as well. Like, you know, VGA cables, USB cables, all that kind of stuff. It's just, I kind of wish you could sort of save favorites on Amazon. You know, I make a little wish list or something, might do the job. But like in some of the online supermarket ordering we have in the UK, you can have like a favorites basket where you go in and just say, I want another one of this thing that I always buy. And I kind of feel like I want that for Amazon, where I can say, like, well, there's the VGA cable I always buy. There's the, you know, the Apple TV adapter I always buy. You know, just repeat. It's almost like you should have subscribe and save for VGA cables or something, you know.
Need the little buttons put on your desk. Like, I need a VGA dash cable. Need a lightning cable. The Amazon Basics lightning cables are fantastic as well. You can get the 6-foot ones for less than $10.
That is my number one pro tip for travel, is to get the 6-foot lightning cable, because your hotel socket is never near your bed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm taking mine with me for tomorrow. Absolutely. So we'll leave it there for this week. Again, send us feedback. Thanks, everybody, for listening for this week. Website's at outofschool.net. I blog at chambersdaily.com. I'm on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.